Morning, everybody. Welcome to the June 2026 WorkReady webinar, and this is our MSD Support Funds webinar, which, as I said, is always very popular. Lots for us to hear about any changes, and we always appreciate the great hard work that MSD Support Funds do to support us who are either studying or working to have the technology, the equipment and the transport needs that we need to function. So in the room today, I have Riley, our faithful and very amazing intern in the community and inclusion team, and Guy Dog Rangi under the table, poking her little nose. So Riley, do you mind just starting with an opening karakia?
Yeah, sure. Me karakia tato, tu tawa mai I runga, tu tawa mai I raro, tu tawa mai I runga. Kia tau mai te mauritu, ki te katoa, haumie, uie, tae, kia.
So we're recording this in case anybody wants to refer back later, but I'd now like to introduce Genevieve and Cheyenne, who are from MSD Support Funds, who are going to run us through what the process is and the program, and answer any questions that you might have. And if obviously they can't answer them today, then they can always get back to us. So welcome, ladies, from Wellington. Hope everyone's okay there, and look forward to hearing what you've got to tell us about MSD Support Funds today.
Kia ora, Sarah and Rangi. Thank you very much for inviting us again. I always look forward to these presentations. I'm Genevieve. I am one of five Support Funds advisors in our Support Funds team based at MSD's national office. There are five of us, plus our manager, Roger. And today on the call, I have our newest colleague, Cheyenne Hart, who is feels like she's been with us forever because she's actually been seconded to us for about 6 months last year, but became permanent in March this year. So we're indoctrinating her into the Support Funds way of doing things. So I thought today would be a good opportunity for Shai to come along and observe a presentation and, interject if there's anything she wants to add. Shai, would you just quickly like to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, guys. As Jean said, I am new to the Support Funds team, but I do have a background at MSD. So before I was in Support Funds, I was in the payments team. So when Jen talked about me being seconded, I was originally seconded to Support Funds to help me with their invoicing, but I loved it so much I decided to apply for a full-time job, and now they're stuck with me. So always fun.
Thank you, Shai. We're delighted to have you permanently as part of our team. Now, what I thought I would do is go through a presentation about Support Funds. Now, I am using slides, but for those of you who can't see, I'm going to talk through them. They're more for my reference to make sure I don't miss anything. Sarah, if you want, I can send you an updated copy of them afterwards. And what we will do at the end of this time is we'll be able to answer some questions, but I do need to be clear we cannot answer individual questions about anyone's specific Support Funds case. So if you do have any of those sorts of queries, you're very welcome to email us later. So I will make a start. So what is Support Funds? It provides the cost of disability assistance to disabled people, including people with health conditions, to gain or retain employment or employment-related training. So we don't help people get jobs, but once you have a job and you need extra support, for example, I'll use myself. I use magnification software. That sort of thing. If you need transport to and from work because you're not able to catch public transport, that sort of thing can be provided as long as it meets the cost of disability. And the same with if you're doing tertiary training, that sort of thing can be provided as well. So the outcomes of support funds are that the client gains or retains unsubsidised employment. So if by what we mean by unsubsidised is if you, for example, get a job and you're receiving, say, a flexi wage from MSD, or your employer's receiving a flexi wage from MSD, you cannot access support funds because that is considered subsidised employment. But that subsidy only lasts for a year. So after that year, then you could receive support funds. It's designed to increase the quality of life and well-being of people with disability or health conditions. Some of the funding sources. So these are things that need to be looked at before support funds. Support funds is actually a fund of last resort, but we don't like saying that. However, other government funding should be considered before support funds. It doesn't mean you have to go running around finding other funding. So other MSD services, like I've mentioned flexi wage. So if you're receiving something like flexi wage, you can't receive support funds at the same time. Things like Ministry of Health. Is the Ministry of Health, that's sort of more in terms of, sort of personal funding, but the Ministry of Health, are you eligible for Ministry of Health funding first? And most support funds people aren't. Are you on ACC or receiving funding from ACC? Because if you are for vocational, like if it's ACC's responsibility to, get you back into work and support you, then you can't access support funds at the same time. And then Ministry of Education, obviously, if, for those who are in education, at school, because we can't, support funds can't fund if someone is still at school. Then we talk about things like reasonable accommodation. So that looks at things like those actions or interventions that an employer can reasonably be expected to undertake to accommodate the needs of a disabled employee. For example, providing the same equipment that any other staff member would be expected to have. I'm going to share a little story here. We recently had an employer contact us to fund some equipment for a client who is working for them. Now, some of that equipment we could fund because it was related directly to the person's disability, but some of it was actually the employer's responsibility because it was the same equipment that they provided to all staff. It just needed to be upgraded. And we went back to them and said, no, it's your responsibility to upgrade that equipment because you provide it to all of your staff. So that's the difference. So say, for example, I'll use blind low vision. Hope you don't mind, Sarah. Say, for example, blind low vision came to us and said, we want you to pay for the upgrades to all of our computers and all of our iPhones and things so that our blind members could use them. The answer to that is no, because that's an operational cost if that equipment has been provided already by the employer. So that's what reasonable accommodation means. It doesn't mean the employer has to provide equipment for a disabled person that they would not normally provide to other staff members. And often an example of that is iPhones versus Androids. An employer might provide their clients with an Android phone, their staff with an Android phone, but the client who's blind or has low vision might not be able to use that type of phone, so they would then need an iPhone. We would obviously ask them to have a conversation with their employer first to say, would you be prepared to swap the Android phone you've provided me with an accessible iPhone? And then if they come back and say, no, this is what, you know, we can't do that, this is what all the staff get, then we would definitely look at that. So, yeah, there needs to be a bit of a conversation between the employer and the applicant, but we try not, you know, that we try not to make that too hard. Now, having said that, before I move on, within government departments and larger organisations, particularly organisations who employ already people with disabilities and health conditions, as you know, as well as other staff, there is a higher expectation of reasonable accommodation. And again, coming back to my situation, using magnification software, MSD actually bought that for me under reasonable accommodation. So I don't own it, they do. And a lot, particularly with government departments, that's quite common because a lot of them, they like to own the software so that they have control over it going into their systems. But it is, there's like a lot of government departments have reasonable accommodation policies that actually allow them to do that. So again, if somebody, you know, from a government department or one of our colleagues applies for assistive technology, mainly the software, we would say to them, have you had a conversation with your manager about MSD, for example, purchasing that for you under reasonable accommodation? And sometimes the client doesn't know that that can happen, or even the manager might not know that that's even a possibility. Okay. I'm just going to take a quick mouthful of water, won't be a minute. Thirsty work talking to you guys. So there are two types of support that we can offer, and I've referred to them, job and training support, and they have some slight differences, which I'll go through. They both can fund transport to and from work or training if you can't use public transport, or if, and I know in some cases in Auckland, you might be able to, but it's like two, sometimes three buses, and it could take a very long time. There might be busy roads to cross and things like that. So we, you know, we look at all of that. And when we fund transport to and from, we don't fund it all. We actually only fund the cost of disability. So how it usually works, we have a calculator that we put, get a quote and we put things in, but how it usually works is usually the client funds at least one, sometimes two, trips themselves. And that's to reflect that everybody has, there's a cost of getting to and from work or study that everybody has. But if you can't drive, there's extra cost that you have as someone with a disability or health condition, and that's the bit that support funds pays. What I also want to stress here is that we do encourage people to use their total mobility card, because that reduces the cost of the transport and can make your funding go further. And at this stage, until they tell us otherwise, you can use your total mobility card with support funds, because it's actually your funding. We're just paying it on your behalf. But you can't use it if a business, say MSD sent me to Auckland, or, you know, somewhere, and I had to come to blind low vision, I would have to get a taxi. But if MSD was sending me there for work, at that point, total mobility can't be used because my employer is actually paying for the taxi. So we have had a number of discussions over the years with the total mobility people, and for the most part that works. There are a few providers who won't accept total mobility for support funds, but they're very few and far between. We don't know what's going to happen, obviously, with the total mobility changes. All we can do is wait and see and hope that that continues.
Genevieve, can we just jump in here?
Absolutely.
Great, thank you. So in Auckland, we got notification yesterday around what is happening with the total mobility scheme. And actually on that point, I'm not sure whether you know, Genevieve, but we actually have a day of action tomorrow. Do you know about that?
No.
No, so basically our policy and advocacy team have put together a campaign and we can send any information out afterwards. And this is also really great for the students in the Blends transition class to know as well. And it's basically we want to get at least 300 either emails or phone calls to Minister, is it
Louise Upston.
Yep. Tomorrow around the scheme and just the impact that it's going to have. We've got templates and such like, and so Riley was in a taxi last week and was actually said, do you know about this day of action? So there is stuff, and so we're really trying to get this as far and wide as possible. So now, Riley, do you just want to talk about yesterday's announcement for Auckland Transport?
Yeah, so clients of the Total Mobility Scheme, if you're on the mailing list for Auckland Transport, would have received an email telling you the new fare cap. So currently, yep, you can get up to $80 funded. That has gone down to $62, and they can currently fund $60 out of the $80 per trip. That has gone down to $46.80. So that's quite significant. So
it is.
Be aware of. And I know you guys don't really have an update with how job and training support funds will be impacted. I know in my situation, it's going to cost an extra $130 to get to work every week. And I know my funding won't cover that, and I don't expect to cover all of it. But something to be aware of for those TM and support funds, that those changes are coming and they're going to hit hard.
Yes, we are very aware of that. Here in Wellington, because I'm a total mobility user as well, individually, we've also had letters confirming the changes, one of which is that the discount, instead of being 75%, will be 65%. That, I believe, is nationwide, but there'll be some other changes happening. What we think, and this is, we haven't had it confirmed yet, some transport providers are saying you can only have X number of trips per week or day or whatever it is. We understand that if that is the case, people who are working employment and health will be exempt from that. But how that's going to work, if that's even going to happen, we don't know. So essentially, from support funds point of view, what we're starting to do now is look at everybody's transport applications, and we'll probably have to do some of this when they come up for review, and change the discount from 75% to 65%, or the funding cap if the funds, you know, if it's one where the funds are set. That's going to take a very long time, be a massive, massive job. And yes, people's transport budgets are going to blow out, but we are trying to look at options to keep supporting as much as we can, because we don't want to, like, it's not your guys' fault that A, the petrol's gone up, and B, total mobility has changed. People still need to get to and from work. So we're at MSD obviously working through a process higher up than support funds to continue doing what we can. And basically at the moment it'll be business as usual, except that we'll change everybody's funding.
We were talking today, just before we jumped on the webinar, with one of our policy and advocacy colleagues. And,
Yep.
you know, I guess the difference for this cohort is we don't really have other options.
No.
You know, if you're deaf, you can potentially still drive. If you, some people who have a mobility issue can get a car
adaptable,
that is adapted.
Yeah.
Again, neurodiverse people. We don't really have that option. And the other thing is, you know, also the elderly who obviously stopped driving, they've had a lifetime of being able to build up kind of like infrastructure around them. A lot of our communities spend a lot of time with similar people who don't have an option. So, you know, we were kind of even toying around the idea, which is probably not going to happen, that, you know, there could be an exemption for the blind cohort because, you know, we just don't have those same kind of level of choices. But I don't think that's necessarily going to happen. But, yeah, it is interesting because it's a really – and I get this so regularly with my role in terms of employment advisory, that people feel that they are really restricted as to where they can actually apply to work because of transport, or also because the job requires, they say they require a driver's license.
Yeah, in which case they need support to drive,
yes, exactly.
You know, to get to and from those things. From our point of view, support funds can't, like, we essentially provide the service. We can't advocate. But what we have been able to do is feed in to our policy people, the concerns of our clients and things.
Sure.
But we are very much bound by what they say, you know, what comes back. But we are strongly saying we still need to support these clients because they don't have a choice.
Yep.
And if we don't support them, you will have a very large, you know, unemployment, because people, it'll mean people can't continue to work. And of course,
well,
MSD's,
it'll be larger than it already is. You know, we're already.
Know, and of course, MSD's policy is, you know, for people to be working. So we kind of keep pushing that back.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. Just in the interests of time, I will continue on, but that's a really good discussion. Unfortunately, as I say, I hope the thing that you're doing tomorrow goes well. Wish you all the best with that. So the other thing that job and training support can fund is interpreting services if you're deaf. Now, once again, it doesn't cover everything. It is designed for workplace meetings, not general conversations in the kitchen with your colleagues, unfortunately. But there has to be, because of obviously support funds, the money's not, you know, there's not an endless budget. There have to be restrictions in place as to what we can actually fund. So, you know, for interpreting services, things like, you know, team meetings, workplace meetings, this sort of thing. And, you know, that, so that can be for if you're working or if you're doing approved training. And then obviously they both can fund a support person. So, if, because of your disability or health condition, you need extra support, and that can be a support person as a driver as well, which for people who are working, and we do have clients who need, obviously, to go out and about and do, you know, to the community and do their jobs, in some cases we actually fund a support person instead of taxis. So they might use taxis, say, to get to and from work, but actually during the work day they might have a support person who is able to drive them to and from their appointments. If that's the case, there obviously has to be a conversation with the employer, because you know, there are things around whether the person drives their own vehicle or whether the person drives the employer's vehicle. And then, of course, you know, there's just a lot of that. So there need to be lots of conversations before we decide which is the best option, you know, obviously with the client, which is the best option for them. Some equipment and software, now we've changed this because it used to say things like sit stand desks, you know, all of that sort of thing. So again, the equipment that we fund has to be essential because of the person's disability or health condition. So I use the example of sit stand desks. If someone, say from MSD, asked for those, the answer would be no, because we all have them. But if somebody from, say, a smaller organisation who had, you know, physical limitations and needed that sort of desk, and that wasn't what the employer already provided, then we could definitely look at it. It's the same with things like iPhones and iPads. They never used to be funded, or even laptops, because they were considered standard equipment. However, again, if because of someone's health condition, disability, you know, vision impairment, that sort of thing, they are required because they've got more accessibility features and it's not something the employer provides their staff regularly, you know, normally, then we can definitely consider that sort of thing. We try and look at each case on an individual basis. So we have funded things like iPhones and iPads, but we've also declined them for some other clients because it does depend on the individual situation and need and whether or not it's something the employer would provide their staff regularly. I've talked about assistive technology software and hardware. So speech screen reading, magnification software. We funded things like electronic magnifiers, specific braille readers, that sort of thing, where it's specifically needed, again, for the person's disability, but it's not something the employer would normally provide. We can fund things like parking at work if somebody, because of the disability, they can drive, but they need to park really close to work or have an undercover park, then we can look at paying for those sorts of things as well. Productivity allowance probably won't apply to many of blind, low vision staff. What that generally is, colleagues, what that generally is that's an allowance that Support Funds pays directly to the employer after an assessment for someone who, because of their health condition or disability, is not able to be as productive as other staff doing the same job. So a lot of clients with intellectual or severe learning challenges, some, you know, have a productivity allowance because while they can do the job, they need that extra support from the employer or from other colleagues within that organisation. So that's the only support fund that gets paid to the employer, not to the client. And we monitor that, so it might be that there's an expectation that they will, you know, they might be able to increase their performance over time to the point where maybe the productivity allowance is no longer needed. But for some clients, it will always be needed because they can never be as productive as their colleagues. And that and a support person and usually equipment always require an assessment. And a job coach. Now, the difference between a job coach and a support person is the job coach is only in place for about 6 weeks. And that's to do with if the person just needs a little bit of extra support with their role, if they need to understand, you know, if their role's changed. So the job coach has to provide a plan of how, you know, how that's going to happen, and that's usually very short term. And then, now we do look at modification grants. But we can't ever fund the whole thing. So, for example, somebody might need, so we don't put in things like ramps and stuff. That's the landlord's, that's the landlord's issue. But what we can do is look at things like, for example, self-opening doors. If there are people, you know, if the client is not able to manage physically, like opening the bathroom door or what have you. We did have a case where we had an employer, a client was working in a two-story building, but there was no lift. And most of the, so that the client without the lift was completely isolated from their colleagues because they had to work downstairs and everybody else was upstairs. So what we're able to do is provide a contribution of the maximum 16,900, but the employer had to pay for the rest. So because of the, so even the modification grant is still subject to the available funding. We don't have a lot of modification grants, but we do occasionally get them. So some rules around job support is obviously it's available for, until it's no longer needed. It's reviewed every 52 weeks. So what we mean by that is some people might apply for job support for some equipment and it's a one-off and that's it. Or if they're using it for, say, transport or interpreting, they're longer-term things. So we can keep rolling it over, but every 52 weeks it has to be renewed. And that's so that we can make sure that people's circumstances haven't changed. For example, you might be working, you know, 5 days a week and need to go into work, you know, all of those days, or your circumstances might change and you might be working some of those days from home, in which case we need to adjust the funding. We do ask for clients to tell us if any circumstances change, but the 52-week review is often a really good time to have that check-in. And we don't, we no longer, for those of you, and I think, Sarah, you might have, I'm not sure, for those of you who used to use funding under WorkBridge, you literally had to reapply with another application form every 52 weeks. We don't ask that. We only ask for the application form and the supporting documentation once, and then at the 46-week mark, I think it is, about 6 weeks before it expires, we'll send out, we have to send an official letter, but we also email or in some cases phone to check in and say, hey, you know, your support funds is going to expire on X date. Has anything changed? And that's your opportunity to say yes, it has, or no, and tell us, or no, it hasn't. And so we can take a phone call or an email as confirmation of any change. We don't have to have, as I say, another form. The only exception to that is if, say, for example, you changed jobs, we would then obviously need verification of your new job. Now, you can access up to 16,900 per 52 weeks. It doesn't mean everybody gets that because the funding is worked out based on need. If everybody was given $16,900 every, you know, 52 weeks, we wouldn't have enough funding to fund everybody's needs because the proportion of people who are studying and working is increasing, which means that we have to make sure that, you know, people get the funding they need. And that's why sometimes we'll ask for an assessment to be done. It's not, you know, a bad thing. It can often be a good thing because it can highlight sometimes that somebody needs more than they're actually asking for. So that's so you might be fund 16,900 if you need, might be fund anything other than that. But we can always, if things change throughout the year, increase it until it reaches that amount. And the training support, now the slight difference here is the training support is a once-in-a-lifetime fund and cannot be renewed. So for somebody doing a three-year university degree, they would have to apply for it every year. But once again, we don't ask for a new application every year. If you're doing, say, a nursing degree, you might apply for some equipment in year one. If you need some more equipment in year two, you actually have to reapply. We can't roll it over. But we can take the information based on your last year and duplicate it. All we would need is evidence of, you know, your new enrollment for that year sort of thing. And the fund for that is only $15,600 and it is for life. So it does mean things like transport is not going to last you 3 years of your degree. So we have that conversation early if someone needs transport, because towards the end, they're going to have to look at other options because we can't fund. And it doesn't cover course fees or course books and things, because they are things that anybody would have to pay for. We do sometimes have clients who are both working and studying and accessing both funds for different things. The issue with that is both funds can't exceed the $16,900 per year, which can make it a little bit challenging to juggle things sometimes, but somehow we do that. Because we obviously want people to, you know, study's important to be able to get people into work. And the study has to have essentially an outcome. It can't just be, oh, I want to do this computer course. It's got to have a work-based outcome, like, will the course you're doing help you get a job? Also, courses and jobs have to be New Zealand-based. Which I think I'll talk about a bit further on. So then we come to the eligibility. Now, for residency, you have to be a New Zealand resident or a New Zealand citizen, and that's MSD-based. You've got to be aged 16 to 65. Now, we've put in unless still in employment at age 65 and have received support fund, because it used to cut off once you were 65, that was it, there was no more funding. However, we have to look at that realistically. If someone in their 70s has never received support funds before, we can't fund it. So we have to look at, you know, that, because technically we're not actually supposed to fund over 65, but we do. The disability or health condition needs to last longer than 6 months, which, of course, for this group, that will be the case. We're not going to ask you every year, are you still blind? Because we know that you are. That's another thing that's been removed since MSD took support funds back, is we're not going to ask every year for confirmation of your disability or health condition unless it's something that can change, like, you know, epilepsy, that sort of thing. But we do rely on the client to, you know, be honest and tell us that, you know, they no longer need the support or they need extra. I've talked about it can't be accessed if you're still at school, because that's the Ministry of Health's responsibility. You must be employed within Aotearoa, and any training must be provided within Aotearoa. So you can't access it if you're doing a course that is based overseas. Or that you, and we did have an inquiry once from a client who was working for an overseas-based employer, but they were working in New Zealand. They could not access support funds because the employment has to be based here in New Zealand. Okay, so all processing of support funds done is done by the support funds team that I've mentioned in MSD's national office. So we're all based in Wellington, but we work with clients all over the country, and our main contact is either email or phone. So you can email us. Sarah's got these details, but Support Funds has its own email. Now, I've put there is an underscore between the support and the funds because it doesn't actually show that clearly. So it's support_funds@msd.govt.nz. And we have our own dedicated phone line, which again Sarah's got, but it's 0800 551 001, as opposed to 559009, which is the main MSD number. So if you want to get hold of us by phone, use that phone number, because we take turns answering the phone and we don't have massive queues. We might, if we're in a meeting or something, it'll go to answer phone, but we get a message through the email system to say that there's a call. So we will respond back, you know, as quickly as we can, but it's not, you know, waiting hours or anything like that. Sometimes people still ring the main MSD number, and then when we get hold of them, they might say, oh, I had to wait. There was a hour and a half wait or whatever it is, and we'll know then that they weren't using our phone number. So I think that is the end of the presentation. Thank you. Now, let's just check.
Thanks.
We've got about just under 15 minutes left, so I'm very happy to open it up to questions.
Remember to unmute yourself because I've muted everyone.
Thanks, Jen. As always, very informative. And, you know, I guess what this highlights is obviously, like every government agency and funding stream, you guys are working within parameters. Unfortunately, they are diminishing somewhat because of the current situation we're in. So I think clients need to be realistic around what is available. Also, what I'd say is, I monitor the support funds that come into Blind Low Vision, so I'm kind of like that conduit, and the team are incredibly, incredibly responsive, very efficient. Absolutely love the fact that you're not a clearinghouse, which is what used to happen, I think. Things can get turned around very, very quickly. What I would say is make sure when you are doing an application that you have all the supporting documentation or all the invoicing or quotations that you need, because there's nothing more frustrating for you and also for the team to have to come back and keep chasing you for bits and pieces. Now, the other thing in terms of the application form, it's still not accessible. I'm not going to go at you, Jen, because I know it's the pain of your life. But what, again, I'd like to say is that because MSD support funds understand this and appreciate this, you guys are there to actually support clients fill out the form if they need it, right?
Absolutely. You can ring us and we'll do it on the phone with you. Sorry, I was chuckling because support funds has been back at MSD for 3.5 years now.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. And we have tried everything to try and get the funds made fully accessible. But being a government department, they don't like their forms where people might be able to change things. We're not giving up. So as Sarah said, you are very welcome to give us a ring and we will go over and complete that form with you on the phone if that's what it takes. Because we want to make things work, and you've probably noticed that I've said some things never used to be funded, but we now look at them. We will do our very best within the restrictions that we have, which we get just as frustrated with, because some of us use support funds as well, or have in the past. We will do our very best to try and get things over the line. But there might be times when we have to come back and say, no, we can't. And that is not a decision that is ever made lightly. You know, we recently had an inquiry from, I think, a 74-year-old. Might have been a blind, low vision member, I can't remember. But we had to say no. And we did not like having to say no. But we had to do that after trying everything we possibly could to get it over the line. But the answer from higher up came back, no, you can't. So if we ever have to say no to you, it is not because we want to. It is because we have no other option. And as Sarah said, if when you're applying for support funds, if you can provide all of the supporting documents you need with your application, then that makes our process quicker because we don't have to keep coming back to you. We can usually apply, you know, we say up to 5 business days if we've got all the information. Longer, obviously, if we've got to get assessments done, if it's equipment, because we have no control over, like, we don't do the assessment, we fund it. But it's obviously dependent on the assessor's availability, you know, whether they've got people in those particular areas. So those ones can take longer, but we always let you know that. And even once we get the assessment back, we'll try and get it processed as quickly as we can.
And I'd just like to jump in. MSD support funds are very practical and really do try and come up with solutions. There was a client who I'd been working with earlier on in the year, and they had found a laptop that was really fit for purpose for their needs, but it wasn't one that was readily available through one of the standard suppliers that MSD used. So I know that MSD tried very hard to sort that out and source that equipment for the person. They didn't just say no. So they look at the solutions, they look at the other avenues where possible. Doesn't always mean to say that that's going to happen, but my experience is that you guys always, you know, absolutely exhaust every possible avenue. Before
we did in that case.
Yeah. What was the outcome? Did that get... sort of?
I think in the end, I do know we went to one of our suppliers who can source equipment from overseas, and said to them, can you, I think there were two that we've done. With the laptop, I think the client chose another option. Because even though the supplier may have been able to get it, there was no guarantee that it would be exactly what they needed. Yeah. But the client in that case also had done their research and was working with us. Yeah. So that took quite some time. Yeah. But, you know, there were conversations with the client. They were giving us information. They did their own research.
It was done in conjunction with. It wasn't just done for. It was done with the client.
No, we don't do for. We do with.
Yeah.
Thank you. I just had a question, and it may be something you can't answer today, but maybe just to share thoughts to think about later. We do know that there's new technology coming in terms of the Meta glasses that are going to be very helpful for blind and low vision folks. It's not quite available in New Zealand, but overseas it's really had an impact. Do you know if MSD support jobs, training support funds has had that conversation about that technology yet?
We have started to because AI is obviously becoming more prevalent. We wouldn't fund anything outside of New Zealand because we can't.
Yeah, but when it comes to New Zealand.
One of the concerns I do know has been expressed, and I've had a conversation with your equipment people as well. There may be issues around data collection. MSD as a government department would have to be extremely careful
Definitely.
because they are very, very, even our own AI that we can use has been cut down and, they've done all sorts of things to make sure that information cannot get out from MSD. So, it's not to say we wouldn't, but those conversations, they'll be ongoing, I think.
Always, always.
But definitely, we have had clients ask, can we fund these sorts of things? And in some cases, we've gone back and said no because there's not enough information yet about how they will work, how effective they are. But I think it was Owen Dibble from that I spoke to there quite extensively. And I know, Blind Low Vision obviously are continuing to research all of those things as well. So I guess essentially once they come through and once that's done, we could potentially be guided by Blind Low Vision's own research. But I guess we'd have to convince, the MSD that they are safe, they're not going to collect data, all of those kind of things.
Even just traveling to and from work, it could
Oh,
be
absolutely,
that's all
because,
sound applicable.
and potentially some of that technology could actually reduce some of the need for some of the other technology that people are
Right.
currently using.
Yeah, for you guys, yeah. Awesome, thank you. Does anyone have any questions who's muted? I can see
Anyone from the
residual.
transition from Blends?
We've got a couple staff on here as well, which is cool. Feel free to pop anything in the chat as well.
I'm just going to stop sharing my screen while we're chatting.
Well, I don't see anything in the chat. I might
Sorry,
stop
just our
recording.
residential team.
Hi, Mari.
Hiya. We have a few people that are a bit under the weather, so we're a little bit short on the class, and people who are recovering from being sick yesterday. At the
Sure.
moment, there are no questions. I had to come in and out a little bit because I was dealing with something, and there was a question that I had, and now I am thinking about what that question was. I was thinking about the AI glasses. Would it be an issue? Because that's going to be beneficial for the person in their whole life, like in their regular daily life. Would there be something where you'd have to prove that it's going to be help just with work, your work
Yes.
life, and then there'd be a way of like some of that amount would you they wouldn't pay for because you're using it and getting to work and cooking your dinner and things like that.
It's interesting because we have never, and I know Workbridge used to do this, but we have never asked clients to part pay for something. Because the reality of that is that then creates a huge nightmare at our end. I don't know. But again, anything that support funds can fund, the primary benefit has to be for work. And I mean, realistically, like we fund, electronic magnifiers and things like that. We know full well people use them at home. But the primary use of them has to be for work purposes. So it's unlikely that we would ask people to pay something. Because we haven't so far. And I guess if it can be demonstrated that yes, these would benefit you at work, then, subject to all of the other things, there'd be no reason that we wouldn't potentially look at them.
Oh, and then my next question is there a way of seeing a list of, I don't know, the equipment that has been funded in the past or the suppliers? So I'm just
No.
thinking, so for blind people who use screen readers and braille devices, I'm assuming that those are all things that are on the list. Yeah, okay. Has anybody got a question about their own ideas around what they might be wanting to buy for their study or for their work? And you want to just check in now with Genevieve to see if it's going to go.
Good morning there. Hey, my name's Gerard. Just one question with regard to the transport side of things. I noticed recently there was, like the Green initiated tax-free or offset for like public transport.
Only in Auckland. We don't get it in Wellington.
I think it was supposed to be across the country because like there was a couple of companies that had taken an IRD test case to get a determination, and it was being pushed on or promoted on Facebook. Now, it was only for trains, buses, ferries, that only. And so, let's say if you said you were going to spend $4,000 a year on public transport, you could offset that off your employer would pay it to this provider, and then you'd get tax. Yeah, that was taken out as a gross amount. I know that's not going to work for support funds
No,
because
it
you're using
wouldn't.
it through a taxi fund, and I understand that's the current legislation. If there's going to, I guess this is the part where it's sort of like part Genevieve, part Sarah is like, I understand that you say that you don't advocate, you just work within our framework. So then maybe, sorry, Sarah from Limelight Vision, does that mean that that becomes an advocacy to government to say, okay, if the funding support is going to reduce as a direct, government payment to a taxi provider, for example, and the total mobility card reduction as discounts going down, is there a way, and I don't have the answer, but or suggestion, but is there that this could be advocated back to the minister to say, hey, if our users or if our clients' users are having to pay more, is there a framework that we can say for these people who have support, have had support with
Yeah, that Gerard
Workbridge?
would be through our policy and advocacy team. I mean, they're pretty busy at the moment with the various changes that have come about. The TM scheme, TSS. Yeah, the invite. There was something last the other month about individualised funding. So yes, as we said at the beginning, unfortunately, costs are going up and funding
Isn't
for our
increasing.
communities are going down. And there's the flow-on effect that is really concerning around the fact that we already have a lot of isolation, people dealing with loneliness, and this is just going to exacerbate the situation. But that's definitely something that our policy and advocacy team would could potentially talk to you about.
In terms of the actual support funds funding, that's actually not even something that MSD can change. That's government. That's been set at that those rates since its inception and has never changed, despite increased costs, increased people, and that certainly keeps getting pushed back, but it isn't something that MSD itself can actually change. It's legislation.
I think it was set in 1992 when the minimum wage was something like $6 or something like that, and we're now sitting at I think just under $25. So the erosion of that, what you could get, I think it was, I worked it out once, it was like a 40-hour working week. You get someone full time, and now I think it's significantly. I haven't done that for a while, but.
And in terms of the funds, my manager worked it out once. The $16,000 back then is equivalent to about $36,000 now.
Wow.
Yeah, but we're never going to get $36,000.
Not enough.
And that's the struggle that we have, is that funding has never changed, and yet we're helping more and more people. And we want, you know, the more people we can help, the more hopefully, you know, we can say, well, look, you know, you've got, you want people in work, but you're not providing the funding for them to be supported while they're in work. But as I say, that's set in legislation that can only be changed by government.
Thank you for all the great questions. I do apologise that and I are in a very busy office today and we are going to be kicked out of the meeting room. So thank you so much, Genevieve. I'll pass back to Sarah.
Thanks, Genevieve and Cheyenne. Lovely to meet you. So we'll do this again next year. But in terms of what's coming up next month, we have on the 13th of July, we've got our interns. So we've got Riley and we've got James going to be talking about the internship program. And we're also going to invite one of our interns who was placed at BLVNZ in our first cohort and is still actually working here and is part of our policy and inclusion team. So we hope that you can join us. Appreciate everybody coming along, and if you've got any follow-up questions, you can let me know, or you need any other information about MSD support funds, and also the recording will be up in the next 24 hours.